This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Welcome to the Pixel People Podcast, where we go beyond the quest lines to discover the backstories and motivations of our favorite video game NPCs to better understand them and ourselves. I'm Amelia, also known as Fire Rider, and each episode I'm chatting with a special guest about a character they find particularly interesting. Since we're taking a close look at how these characters impact the story, please be aware that spoilers are likely. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hey, so before we dive in, I just wanted to share with you real quick that I now have a Patreon. I have no plans to include corporate advertising on the show, so if you'd like to support what I'm doing here, I hope you'll check it out. I've got some great rewards at every level, including, for Tier 2 and Tier 3 subscribers, an invitation to record and send me your thoughts about a character I've covered on the show to be included in a future episode. Check it out at patreon.com/firerider, and you can find the link in the show notes. Thanks so much for being a listener. On with the show. Welcome to Pixel People. I'm Amelia, aka Fire Rider, and my guest today is Sam, or N7 Legend, and he is the co-host of the Mass Effect Lorecast. He's been a Mass Effect fan since 2007, when, after picking up Mass Effect 1, he spent the entire night exploring uncharted worlds. Welcome, Sam, to Pixel People.
Hey, how's it going, Fire Rider? I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am awesome. It's the weekend. I have a big move coming up ahead of me, so that has been taking a lot of my time. But I actually just got done streaming Mass Effect 1 earlier. I'm wonderful. Doing a playthrough ahead of the Legendary Edition. Yes. Legendary Edition is set to come out May 14th, and I will be picking that up. The only debate that I have is whether I'm going to be getting it for Xbox or I'm going to be picking it up for PC. I'm leaning toward PC, but I still need to get one. I was wanting to build my own, but this chip shortage has kind of been a thorn in my side.
Oh, no. I didn't even know
about
that.
So I think I'm going to have to do pre-made build now.
Yeah, so I know that I'm picking mine up for PC because I'm going to stream it for sure. And I will include a link to your stream in the show notes, too, so people can check out what you're doing.
That would be great. I'd love
that. Yeah, definitely. So we're definitely talking about Mass Effect today. No question there. Who are we talking about?
We are going to be talking about one of my personal favorites. He's a squad mate that you can get in Mass Effect 2, and he's a character in 3. And his name is Morden Solis. He's Morden a Solarian, Solis. And he's a scientist. In fact, he is the Solarian scientist.
The very model of a scientist Solarian?
He is.
Would you say?
He is. And fun fact, you know, that song that he sings is actually from... It's because the voice actor who voices Morden Solis, he did an entire production of, I think it's Gilbert and Sullivan, right? He did
Pirates
an entire Pirates of Penzance. Yeah, uh-huh. He did an entire production of that when he was much younger, and he did it on a public broadcast network.
That's amazing. When he broke out into that, I was so delighted. I was just like, I was laughing so hard, and it was just the most brilliant moment. It was fabulous. It was so wonderful.
It is quite the Easter egg that BioWare yes. put in there.
That's
it's
so great.
Definitely
I had
a
no
writer's
idea the connection
line.
To the actor, though. That's so cool. I just thought it was just this perfect little funny moment. But knowing that it was actually for the actor just makes it that much better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it had to have been him. Someone else might have gotten it wrong.
Here we go. All right. So I'm going to preface this with there are going to be lots and lots of spoilers here because it's impossible to talk about Morden's story arc without getting into some serious spoilers. And there will probably be tears on my part because, you know, I cry a lot anyway. People know this. And games often make me cry. But I have never cried like I did in Mass Effect 3. And Morden is one of the reasons why. And I remember just sitting there throughout that whole cutscene, just my hands over my face like this, and just ugly sobbing. I mean, not even subtle. but like and straight on.
You know, kind of both. No matter what happens, no matter what you choose, everyone knows that Mass Effect is one of those games where different things, there are outcomes for your decisions. And that's what drew a lot of people to it.
Yeah.
But I'm curious as to hear which decisions you picked as they pertain to Morden in Mass Effect 3.
Let's see. I think some of them are tricky to remember. I played mostly Paragon. Maybe a little touch of Paragade, but mostly Paragon.
So you cured the Genophage.
I cured the Genophage.
Gotcha.
Yes.
So with Morden, spoilers alert. Morden perishes no matter if you choose to cure the Genophage or if you choose to sabotage it. And both outcomes are gut-wrenching. I've played through
if
both.
If I had sabotaged it and still lost Morden, oh my god, I don't know what I would have done. I mean, at least the way I played it through, like, I felt like some good had come from it. I still was devastated. I mean, it's just absolutely devastated.
But it's a guilt trip if you sabotage it. And then, because he pretty much says, up yours, Shepard. I'm going to go ahead with this anyway because it's the right thing to do. And then you try to stop him. And, you know, you can try to stop him, right? But eventually, if you're so dead set on it, Shepard has to shoot Morden. And it's just absolutely, like I said, it's gut-wrenching, and it's like a terrible tale of betrayal. It's on your own part, on the player character.
I ran
part.
Into that with Tally. Oh my god. So I lost Legion in Mass Effect 2. I lost him during the suicide mission. I lost him immediately prior to the suicide mission. So I found out later that by losing him, there was pretty much no way to salvage that situation. And I felt like the world's biggest shithead.
Because it really
Tally
sets you up for a hard...
Tally clearly felt so betrayed by me.
It sets you up for a hard decision if you lose Legion.
That was rough. That was rough. And that was another scene where I just fell to pieces. Because they give you that Paragon option to reach out, and I took it going, oh thank god, hit that button as hard as I can, and it didn't do any good,
and it doesn't matter.
Matter. And when they were doing the teaser trailer for Legendary Edition, they gave you just a little snippet of her falling, and it was just like, no, why do you want to remind me of that?
To this day, that soundtrack that's called Rannoch that plays during that scene, when if you're unable to prevent the Quarians from engaging the Geth, which is, spoiler alert, a surefire way to ensure the Quarians are completely wiped out entirely. Because all of the Quarians exist, well, almost all of the Quarians exist on the Migrant Fleet. And so they lead the Migrant Fleet to engage the Geth, and if you can't stop them, if you can't negotiate peace, all of them die. And Tally is on the planet side surface watching it happen. So that that whole scene that plays out where basically you have to watch from the planet side an entire race get wiped out and then watch Tally's reaction to it. It's also
that was
just heartbreaking.
That was awful. But you know, it was awful, but it was so good, you know, because I mean that game writing can make you feel that way. Is and it took me a long time to come around to Mass Effect. The first time I tried Mass Effect, it didn't for whatever reason, it didn't click, and I didn't give it a fair shot. And then I was you know, somebody wanted to talk about Legion for the podcast, and that episode was like episode 6 or 7, I can't remember which one it was. And so it was like, okay, we're gonna try this again. And this time I gave it a fair shot, and it clicked so hard. It was just like, where has this game been? What is wrong with me? How did I miss out on this? Because just the writing is so brilliant. and you care about the characters so much. And these hard choices, you know, and I've talked to other people who are like, yeah, I'll save scum it, da da da. And I was just like, nope, I can't do it on this. I cannot save scum on this because you got to live with those choices. You got to.
You feel like you're cheating yourself if you save scum on it.
Yeah, and that's no shade on anybody who does. Everybody, you know, play the game the way you want to play it. Yeah.
I do it in Skyrim, and I've done it in different games before, but Mass Effect is one of those where you feel like, I'll do it on the next playthrough. Yeah. Now I know.
I'm going to try. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you have not as much control as you'd like over who actually dies, especially, you know, when you're on that suicide mission, on your way to it. There's a limit to what you can control on that. So... I had no way to prevent Legion from dying. I had no way. I mean, I lost Legion, Jack, and what is his name? The guy who is looking for his son.
Fane.
Thank you. Yes. So I lost all three of them and then I lost Miranda at the very end of it. And it was just like, ugh, this is
the
rough.
Amount of pressure. The amount of pressure that the game puts on the player to choose the right people for the right job in that suicide mission is unlike really any other decisions I've ever made in a video game, because I always felt like no matter what, it'll be okay. But in Mass Effect 2, you are not given that, you are not given that assurity. And by Mass Effect 3, some of those decisions have very grave consequences.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and I know that there were like whole sections of Mass Effect 3 that I did miss, you know, because I lost Jack and Miranda and Thane. I was very glad that I kept Morden. I know that a friend of mine lost Morden during that and was either spared or missed out. I'm not too sure how to spin that, honestly. But, you know, as hard as that scene was, I'm really glad that I got to experience it because it was so powerful. And, you know, and when I played through Mass Effect 2, Morden immediately jumped out at me as such an interesting character, because he operates kind of in the gray zone, kind of the moral gray zone. And the decisions he makes are really interesting to me because you can see the logic in what he's doing. And what he's choosing, even if you don't necessarily agree with it. But he, at the same time, he clearly regrets some of his decisions and regrets being a part of some of those decisions and has good intentions. I mean, there's no question that he has good intentions. So he just, he immediately caught my attention in two, and then three happened, and it was just kind of like, okay, we've got to talk about this guy, because, oh my god. So, you're the lore expert here. I am not an expert on Mass Effect lore. I am the person who plays through it and watches the characters and cries at the horrible things that I've done to them. So, can we kind of dig in a little bit about, Morden's actions and the Genophage, because that is such an important backdrop to all of this.
It's integral to his identity and the role he plays for not just Mass Effect, but a member of Commander Shepard's squad. Mm-hmm. So, as we know from the games, Morden was a scientist who worked on the Salarian Special Tasks Group, which is kind of like the Salarian CIA. And he was one of the original scientists who worked to modify the Genophage. Now, for those who don't know, the Genophage was a sterilization plague created by the Salarians, and it was meant to quell the Krogan rebellions. The Krogans are a race of aggressive alien species who, after the Council had uplifted them, and the Salarians specifically had culturally and technologically uplifted them, the Krogans fought the war for the Council and fought back the Rachni, an intelligent hive mind insect species, who were currently kicking the Council's butt left and right. So when the Krogans proved themselves to be the saviors of the galaxy after that, they started taking more and more and more and more, and they started colonizing planets that were already colonized. So by that time, the council said, you know, this needs to stop. And the Krogans eventually colonized the Asari world of, I can't remember the name now. I want to say it's something with an L, but they colonized the Asari world, and the council puts its foot down. But the Krogan representative to the council barges in and basically says, if you want us to leave, you're going to have to make us. Because at that point, the Krogans are well aware that they are the best warriors in the galaxy, and they're the most prolific. Due to the Krogan homeworld of Tuchanka being completely irradiated from a nuclear civil war and nuclear winter, and Tuchanka's natural like abundance of toxins and predators, Krogan birth rate had to be super, super high in order to mitigate all of the losses. So just to keep population growth, Krogan birth rate very high. However, like I said, environmental factors bring that down. Now, when the Salarians and whatnot, they bring them out and they culturally uplift them to beat the Rachni, now all of a sudden the Krogan are spawning like left and right, and there's way too many of them. So in order to quash the Krogan rebellions, the Salarians engineer a sterilization plague called the Genophage, and they deliver it through a thing called the Shroud. The Shroud becomes very important in Morden's own story. But basically, the Shroud was originally, this is what the Salarians say, that the Shroud was originally installed on Tuchanka as a means of purifying the atmosphere. And it wasn't, as I understand it, it wasn't a unique technology. They had done so on other planets, but the Shroud was something special. It was very large, capable of affecting an entire planet. So that's ultimately how the Salarians deploy the Genophage. And eventually, the Salarians realize that the Genophage isn't working as well as they hoped because the Krogans are adapting to it. And the Krogan birth rate is steadily increasing. And I think the statistic was that it started increasing from 4%, 4% of all of Krogan births being viable to something higher than that. And then that made it an ineffective Genophage in the Salarians' eyes. So the Salarians modify it. And one of the original scientists on that team who worked to modify the Genophage to keep it deadly, so that the Salarians can maintain some type of supremacy over the Krogans and make sure that the Krogans aren't a threat. Well, here comes Morden Solis. He's one of the STG scientists who works on that Genophage. So, sorry, that's a really long-winded explanation to bring us up to speed about what happens before we meet Morden Solin, or Morden Solis in Mass Effect 2. But we meet Morden Solis on Mass Effect 2 in the slums of Omega. And it is more or less because his work on the Genophage had already completed. So his work with STG was done. And frankly, he was a little bit disgusted with his work. He's reluctant to admit that. You don't really get him to admit that until much later in the story.
Yeah.
But he's kind of working as a doctor without borders, I think we'd say, in our world.
Yeah.
So he's working in the slums of Omega, and he's providing free healthcare where there is a plague, a different plague in Omega that's ravaging the poor. And so he's providing free healthcare to them.
Which is interesting. So, because when you meet him, then your initial reaction to him is, oh my God, what a good guy. Like, look at this wonderful thing that this person is doing. And then especially as somebody who didn't play Mass Effect 1, to get the bits and pieces of, you know, his backstory, it colored that so differently. I mean, I still thought, you know, my initial reaction was still, you know, he's really good and he has a good heart. But then you get these pieces of what he did in the past and the work that the Salarians did, and you're just like, ooh.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it turns out that, you know, and I don't want to use the word human because he's not human, but Morden is a being. He's an intelligent being that isn't monolithic. He's not static. Right. It's not that he's all good or all bad. He yes. has some stains on his past, just like we all do.
Absolutely.
And I think that makes him a more dynamic character, and it makes mm-hmm. him more relatable, and it also makes him more admirable. Because yes. it's one thing, and I'm going to draw a parallel from a different piece of literature here, which I'm sure you know. It's one thing to be the paragon hero, say Hercules from the Disney movie, you know, who's yeah. always good. It's a different thing to be a hero who has redeemed himself.
Agreed.
Or a mm-hmm. former, maybe morally neutral person or even villain. Let's think along the lines of Javert from Les Miserables.
Ooh, very nice. Yes.
Or even, I forget the character's name, but A Tale of Two Cities, the tax collector, who at the very end yeah. says, it is a better thing that I do now than any I have ever done. And it is yeah. a better, far, far better place or rest that I know than any I've ever known. Yes. I'm paraphrasing there. But I think that quote is a good parallel to Morden's ultimate fate. Because he knows he's done some wrong in the past, but he mm-hmm. wants to rectify it yeah. because he doesn't want to leave any stone unturned. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way to characterize his personality. He's highly analytical, of course, but he doesn't leave a job undone.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, what was I just going to say? He's, well, one of the parts in two that kind of comes to mind is when you encounter the student, and you have to decide whether or not to keep the student's work or not.
Malon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was such a challenging section to work through. Because, we're talking about things like eugenics and... just straight up genocide. I mean, really, let's not mince words about that. And these are ugly, ugly topics. At the same time, what would happen if you let the Krogan rage unchecked? But you can't make those decisions for another. You know what I'm trying to say? It's like trying mm-hmm. to justify all of these different things and work them out in your head. Is so complex and complicated, and then you find yourself almost trying to justify these horrific actions to yourself, and then you're just like, wait, no, what am I thinking, what am I saying? But it I think it paints such a picture of the real world, because, you know, people are constantly doing these kinds of things, and, you know, and I'm not saying we should side with them, but, you know, I think to counteract them, we do have to understand them to a certain degree.
And regardless, I think just for posterity, it's best to understand the events of history.
Absolutely.
And the hardest part about our own world, as is the case with Mass Effect, is that rarely do people do anything because they want to be bad.
Oh, absolutely. They evil, always think they're the good guy. Always.
Right. Evil rarely brings forth evil in the name of evil.
Right.
And so that actually is a good segue into the work that Malin was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Malin, as you mentioned, was Morden's student. And so Malin has a very different outlook on the Genophage than Morden did. And when you talk to Morden mm-hmm. in Mass Effect 2, you get the ultimate sense that Morden feels the Genophage at the time was necessary. Similar to how I'm sure a lot of people can relate, especially in the United States, if you've talked to other Americans about the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki,
right.
you might get the answer that it was ultimately necessary because it ended the war and it
Excellent
saved
example.
Lives. And so even though it was atrocious, which people will admit, and mm-hmm. it was horrific and scary and totally inhumane, it saved more lives in the end than otherwise. Which is a hard argument to make, I think, because that's predicting the future, which we don't
right.
know,
right? right?
We only live in one timeline. But that is the same argument that you will get from many Salarians about the Genophage, and it's also the same argument that you get from Morden.
Mm-hmm.
However, Malin says that this was not the right way, and that when they modified the genophage, they should have allowed for the Krogan to determine their own future. Mm-hmm. So Malin is recruited basically into a chief, into a Krogan chief's sphere of influence, where Malin is working on a cure for the genophage. However, it's not as it seems. Malin is doing all of the, he's doing the right thing for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And that's in my opinion, you know, that's
well,
just
he's
me.
100% going about it the wrong way too.
Right. And
he's just leaving a trail of destruction behind him.
He's burning through bodies. You know, he doesn't care about the welfare of his test subjects. And that's right. The biggest problem.
Yeah.
He has experimented on all of these live test subjects and they've died. And that's the way that you walk into it during mm-hmm. Morden's loyalty mission. When you're there to stop Malin, and you walk in and you see human bodies, you see Krogan bodies, you see all kinds of bodies that have been experimented on to no extent. And it's similar to the experiments that the Nazis ran in their concentration camps.
Absolutely.
And yet it's, and here's the really morally crazy part, is that these experiments were more justified by Malin because mm-hmm. he was ultimately trying to find a cure for the genophage, but he was being used because a Krogan warlord was trying to build an army.
Yeah.
Which is very similar, by the way, to the end of Mass Effect 1 when Saren is trying to co-opt the Krogan as a tool of destruction on behalf mm-hmm. of Sovereign. And he's trying to cure the genophage through a cloning facility on Vermeier. One that Shepard ultimately has to destroy. And if you're not skilled enough in Charm or Intimidate, the two dialogue options, you actually have to kill Rex back then in Mass Effect 1. So the genophage is a very divisive topic within the universe itself, and it can result in numerous main characters' deaths. But it's Shepard's decision at the end when you confront Malin and you have his data. It's Shepard's decision whether or not A, Malin lives, or B, he dies, or A, in a different sense, Morden and Shepard save the data from Malin's work, or they destroy it because it's an abomination that they couldn't live with themselves after using something that was achieved through such horrendous means.
So in my playthrough, Malin died and the data were destroyed.
Yeah. So I think that would be the ultimate Paragon decision, although I'm hesitant to say that that would be Paragon because the lines are blurred, right?
Mm-hmm. It was hard. I had to really sit there with that and just be like, okay, the damage has been done. We could use this, but if we use this, it justifies the damage. And I mean, I sat there just trying to work that out in my head, and there were no. I'm somebody who, when I'm playing, I like to come up with, I like to try to find the solution that makes the most people happy. And in Mass Effect, it's impossible. It's just straight up impossible. Those decisions, I can't think of a scenario off the top of my head where I walked away from a decision feeling like, okay, this was absolutely right and justified, da da da. Everything seemed like a really tough compromise, and like somebody was going to get hurt no matter what I did.
Yeah. And
which is so
I think
real.
It's
so
probably
real.
An important detail for Malin's work was that they were kidnapping their subjects,
right.
So it wasn't, you know, there was one subject who was there voluntarily,
mm-hmm.
but that might even make it more heartbreaking because mm-hmm. it was a female Krogan who was just there for any inkling of hope
yes.
for her species.
And she
survival.
Came across as almost kind of brainwashed.
Mm-hmm. And she did. And there was a level of, when you looked at it and when you looked at the other circumstances surrounding it, there was a level of Stockholm syndrome.
Yes.
There.
Absolutely.
And the ultimate goal of Malin's work was to build a Krogan army and mm-hmm. then conquer the galaxy. So it wasn't that he was going to cure the genophage and now, okay, everyone's free to do as they wish. It wasn't that. It wasn't purely humanitarian. The Krogan were once again being used as a pawn in the ultimate goals or aspirations of some other person. And if there's one race that is used as a pawn over and over and over and over again, it's the Krogan.
Mm-hmm.
They're used as a pawn to defeat the Rachni, and then, you know, they're culturally uplifted by the Salarians, and then after the Salarians, much like a small child, they've outlived their usefulness, the Krogans have.
Mm-hmm.
The Salarians kind of toss away the toy and say, I'm done playing with you.
Yeah.
And now, how about the genophage? Because how about you go back to your, you know, obsolescence, your irrelevance?
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, Salarians can be cast in this light as an entire race that they are cold and unfeeling, that they're harsh and analytical, and they're supremacists.
Yeah.
And that's not the case, really, for Mordin.
Right.
He is prideful. He is. As is evidenced by his famous quote, you know, had to be me. Somebody else might have gotten it wrong. But, and because of his pride, that might be one reason he's afraid to admit that he had any wrongdoing. He's afraid to admit verbally that he had any wrongdoing in working on the genophage. But this is also the guy that's spearheading a cure for it in Mass Effect 3.
Right. Hey guys, as you know, I'm part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, and I wanted to take a moment to introduce you to a couple of other great Rocket Club shows you'll want to check out.
Long gone are the days where people sing about West Virginia as almost heaven. After nuclear war and disease, it's far from heaven now. Far From Heaven, a Fallout 76 story podcast, is a tale of survival, conflict, and hope set in the Fallout 76 game world. Join our survivors on their journey to reach that almost heaven once more. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, and many other great podcasting apps. Far From Heaven, a Fallout 76 story, available now.
Hello, this is Charlie Transmutation coming to you with another PSA announcement.
No, Charlie, this is a commercial.
What? Crap, nobody told me that. What are you supposed to do in this thing anyway?
Well, Charlie, I'm glad you asked. This is the part where we introduce our new homebrew 5e D&D podcast, The Fumbling Four and the Almighty Crit, where we explore the homebrew world of Altaris using homebrew rules and homebrew material from the Dungeon Masters Guild.
Eh, sounds boring. I'm out of here.
See you later, Charlie. We hope to have you guys come check us out soon. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Greetings, members. We welcome you to our little enclave. We have opened our archives to tell the story of the new enclave in Appalachia. Follow our cast of former Vault 76 residents as they struggle to rebuild what had been lost. Join us here on the Modus Files. We can be found on any Enclave-sanctioned network, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and more. And may you, dear listener, survive and thrive as our little enclave has.
Are we going to talk about it?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, I was giving a pause in case we needed one. It's heavy.
It's heavy. This is heavy stuff.
So in Mass Effect 3, you know, Shepard first encounters Mordin on Sirkesh, which is the Salarian homeworld. And they are there because they currently have a female Krogan who they're working on to try to cure the genophage.
Right.
And there's two different ways things can go. If you've saved the data, if you've saved Malin's research data, and if you haven't. And if you have, then Mordin uses the data to aid in the treatment of Eve. And by the way, Eve is directly correlated to Malin because she's the only surviving female Krogan from those experiments.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the same Krogan.
She is. Yeah, so she is the same Krogan who survived. Yeah, She's the only surviving female from Malin's experiments.
Okay.
And so Cerberus, of course, shows up when you're there. Mm-hmm. And with Moradin, you have to fight off Cerberus. And eventually, Eve, Moradin, and Shepard, well, Shepard and Moradin extract Eve from the research facility. Moradin kind of, you know, goes renegade in his own way, because and let's back up a little bit. When you first meet Moradin on Mass Effect 2 in Omega, he's like tending to the wounded and tending to the sick, but he's also fighting off mercs at the same time.
Yeah.
So he's not just a doctor, but he's also a badass.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And he's also when he's at the STG facility with Eve, of course the STG isn't going to let her go.
Mm-hmm.
But Moradin doesn't really care. So he, like, if I can remember right, he goes up behind a few STG operatives and shocks them and incapacitates them, which allows Shepard to extract Eve. And they get out of there. Moradin then temporarily takes over the Normandy's med bay to work on a cure for the genophage.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the state of things.
I was so thrilled. I was like, yay, I've got Moradin again. Yay.
And he doesn't, he doesn't become a, actually, I might be wrong about that. Does he become a squad mate in Mass Effect 3? It has been so long. I didn't think that he was a usable squad
mate. I was tricked into
mate.
Thinking he was going to become one, and then brutally let down.
Yeah. And I think there's, because they did that from a story perspective, because they you don't want any danger to come to Moradin before the doom that has meant for him is coming.
Yeah.
And so we can get into
He's only protected
that.
By plot armor up to a certain point.
Exactly. Like, his plot armor dissolves past a certain point.
Yeah.
And it's really it's tragic when it does. Because that is later in Mass Effect 3. And if people remember, if you've played Mass Effect 3, you probably remember that the Salarian Dalatras, which is similar to, you know, a leader or a chief executive of a government, basically propositions Shepard, because Shepard at this point has already been contacted by Rex, if Rex is alive, or Reeve, the other Krogan, if Rex is not alive, to cure the genophage. And Shepard is working on it, so that Shepard can secure the Krogan as an ally in the fight against the Reapers.
Right.
And after a meeting with the Council and other leaders, basically Shepard walks away from the comms, and then Joker says, hey, we got an incoming comms from the Salarian Dalatras. Mm-hmm. And in typical fashion with the Salarians, the very backhanded, covert, the Dalatras offers Shepard an out and says, look, the Salarians planned for this outcome, that a cure for the genophage might be developed one day. And if you agree to sabotage that cure, then we will ensure that you have the Salarians' full and unwavering support in the fight against the Reapers. But if you don't, we're not going to help you whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so there's one of those choices that's presented to Shepard, as you can't have your cake and eat it too. You're going to have to make a decision, and you're going to have to plant your flag and live with that consequence.
Yep.
And Moradin plays an integral role in that. Moradin eventually, Moradin is spearheading the cure, and Moradin himself goes down to T'Chaka with you, because he's planning on going up to the Shroud, because Moradin is also aware that the Shroud has been rigged to detonate if someone attempts to disperse a cure.
Right.
And so Moradin volunteers and says, no, I'm going to do it. It's only right that I do it, because he worked on the genophage from the get-go. So if you support Moradin and if you support curing the genophage, it is a heartbreaking goodbye, because it's pretty much one of those typical soldier, you know, salutes, and then like the other soldier walks off to his death, because it's a certain death that he knows he's going to.
Yeah.
And while Moradin is in the elevator and going up, You watch him go up the elevator in the shroud, and when he gets up to the top to the command room, he's mashing all the buttons, you know, presumably dispersing the genophage cure.
He's singing his little song too.
He's singing Pirates of Penzance. And he is singing that he is the very model of a scientist Solarian.
What's funny, and it's almost ironic because he's being the exact opposite of a scientist Solarian in that moment. He's going absolutely 100% against.
Well, I think that he's defining it himself.
I think that's true.
He's doing. He's saying, you know, too long has the basically the opposition voice of Solarians against the genophage been washed out, and now he's wearing the title of scientist Solarian as a badge of pride instead of a badge of shame, because I think the way that he views it is that he and he alone is taking the entire burden on his shoulders to rectify his race's horrible genocide. And I see you getting emotional over there. I'm trying to hold back some tears. Because this guy is taking the whole burden onto his own shoulders. And the sense of duty that he does it with is just astounding. Yeah. And again, he says to Shepard in regards to when Shepard tries to convince him away from doing this, Shepard basically says, you don't have to die before Morden goes up. And Shepard warns him of the sabotage that the Solarians of the STG has made to the Shroud. And it seems that Morden was already aware of it. Mm-hmm. But basically, Morden replies to it with, it had to be me. Someone else might have gotten it wrong.
It's like you can't even hear those words without just like going, oh. But yeah. it's powerful on so many different levels though too, because it's not just, you know, in a lot of games, you know, a character dies and it's just kind of like, oh man, that sucked. I really like that character, but the way in which he dies and the massive transformation that takes place because of that is just. It's so big and so. See, I'm trying to find words. it was just this incredibly powerful moment that you just don't see that often. And to go against, like, your own people and even your own prior actions in that way to make up for everything that has been done to this entire other. Group of I mean, I'm just gonna say people, you know, because I mean all of these characters are people, they're aliens but they're people. There's this intense selflessness that is just even while he's being slightly arrogant about it, it's such a rare quality just in general.
And to a certain extent, you have to look past Morden's words and you have to look at his actions. Absolutely. He's just one of those guys.
Absolutely.
Because his actions don't always coincide with his words. And in fact, speaking of actions and decisions, I almost glossed over a point in the notes that I had written for this. And that is that I was wrong. I said that Morden has to die on T'Chanka in any situation, but that's actually not true. And the reason why I said that was because in every playthrough of mine, I have always saved Rex on Mass Effect 1.
Okay.
But that isn't necessary. So in some players, I'm sure, have played the entire game without Rex. And if you jumped in 2 and
I had no Rex.
In 3, you didn't have any Rex. Right. So you had Reeve. And apparently, if Reeve is the clan leader of, I can't remember his clan now. Now I feel awful. If Reeve is the clan leader instead of Rex, Erdnot, I'm sorry,
Erdnot, yes, okay.
If Reeve is the Erdnot clan leader instead of Rex, and you don't have, you got rid of Malin's data. which leads to Eve's death, then Morden can actually be saved during
the I had an option. And oh no. Yeah. Like, all of those pieces are there and I couldn't do it.
So this is where all of these choices kind of like they weave this fate that is so unique to everyone's story.
Yeah.
So let's count it, right? So there, Reeve is the clan leader. That's the outcome of one decision that the player makes. The lack of Malin's data, that's another decision that the player makes. And then telling Morden about the sabotage is a decision that the player makes. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately choosing to sabotage the Genophage cure is another decision that the player makes. So that's four decisions. That all you have to make all of those four decisions in order to save Morden, it appears.
And it's crossing over multiple games. I mean, that's...
Right.
That's amazing. I mean, what freaking geniuses at BioWare.
Yeah. and it's only, like I indicated, it's only possible if Morden can be convinced that the Krogan will only, you know, go back to their Krogan Rebellion self under Reeve's command. You cannot convince Morden that will happen if Rex is in charge, because Morden at this point knows Rex, because you do interact with Rex on Mass Effect 2. Mm. And that is where Morden's loyalty mission occurs. So it is impossible to convince Morden otherwise if Rex is in charge.
Yeah. Man. I could have saved him.
Yeah. Oh. And
you know, I don't know. It wouldn't have had the same hit, though. I mean, it was really his story arc makes more sense if it ends that way.
I think that was the canon one.
Yeah, you want very badly for for him to make it through, but it makes more sense the other way.
It would have been so easy for Morden to just be satisfied with being one of the Salarian race's top scientists. It would have been so easy for him to just lean back in his chair and go, "My work is done. You know, I've contributed to society. I'm going to coast to retirement now." Because let's remember, the Salarians have very short lifespans.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so Salarians, I think, at best live to around 40 years.
Oh.
Yep. So they have very short lifespans. So one would think that if you do have a retirement kind of system in the Salarian society, then Morden would want to do that. But he's not done. And so Morden, in addition to working on a cure for the Genophage, he also offers his support for the Crucible as well in Mass Effect 3. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, if your Morden did not survive the suicide mission in the Collector base in Mass Effect 2, Paddock Wicks actually steps in and fulfills Morden's role.
Okay, I was wondering how the heck you get through all of that. Otherwise.
So regardless, Morden's name appears on the Normandy's memorial wall. I guess there's one scenario that we already talked about where his name won't appear on the memorial wall. However, man, is that a price to pay, because it's kind of like, can you live with yourself after that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the ethics class trolley question over and over and over again. You know what I mean?
It is.
You're constantly making that decision in Mass Effect. Which way are you going to send that trolley?
You're faced with impossible choices from Mass Effect 1 onward.
Yeah.
And the choices compound in each other, so they get infinitely more complicated and consequential.
It's hard to be consistent even because you I think that's something that is interesting to me, because I like to feel like I'm making consistent choices both in a game and in real life. It's like, I think we all kind of want to feel that way to a certain extent. We don't want to feel hypocritical, we don't want to feel like we're going against what we've already said, but it's so good at giving you more knowledge so that the next time you're making a decision, you realize that when you first were presented with a similar choice, you didn't have the full picture, so you just did the best you could with what you had. But then you have far more information the second time, you know, it comes around. And I think that's really parallel to real life as well.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And that just kind of brings it full circle with what we were talking about with Morden being the most quote-unquote human character of supporting characters in Mass Effect. And in some ways, more human than Commander Shepard can be. Yeah. And fun fact, if you did choose, or if your Morden did die in Mass Effect 2 and did die in the suicide mission, and if you played Mass Effect 1, there's a very famous speech on Vermeier in Mass Effect 1, the final planet, where you find the Krogan cloning facility. And there is Captain Kirahi, a Salarian commander, who gives an inspirational speech to his fellow Salarian troops about holding the line. And he says, you know, hold the line, hold the line. This is where we hold the line. And ultimately, Captain Kirahi can perish. So if Captain Kirahi, and Morden also reveals that he used to serve under Captain Kirahi. He makes a comical remark about it, actually, at one point, and says, yeah, hold the line. Guy was great, but kind of an ass. And that's very Morden, Morden thing to say. But basically, if Morden dies on the collector base in the suicide mission, his last words are equally heartbreaking. His last words are, tell them I held the line. Yeah. And so it's pretty hard not to tear up at that. Just because no matter what Morden's ultimate fate is, he cared. You can never accuse him of not caring. Of course he cared.
This is a guy with a lot of honor, and not like in a how am I trying to define that? Not in a going down in a blaze of glory kind of honor, but in a more quiet, personal. He's trying to do the right thing every single time, and I think that's what I was just saying too. That as his information and his understanding changes, he makes those different decisions, and that is so honorable to change your beliefs based on new information. And I think people are so resistant to doing that sometimes. They pick that position and just stick with it and stick with it and stick with it regardless of what they find out. But being able to incorporate that new understanding, that new information into your own understanding, and then adapt your choices to personally, you know, adapt your personal choices, That's honorable.
Right. And I think doing the right thing doesn't always mean that you have to always say, I always did the right thing.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you have to look in the mirror and say, even though my intentions were good, and maybe they weren't, maybe your intentions weren't good at the time, but if you want to have like a humble heart that always wants to do good, then you have to be willing to look at your own actions in the past without pride, without ego, and be willing to say, okay, maybe that wasn't the best decision, but it's not too late. It's never too late. I can always do good now.
Yes.
But you have to be open to new information, which Morden is.
Yes.
And so we're talking a lot about courage, and the courage that Morden displays isn't the same type of courage that Rex displays, or that the other Krogans like Grunt display. It's not always charging headfirst into battle. But it reminds me of a quote that my late mother loved. And the quote is, courage doesn't always roar. Sometimes courage is the quiet voice at the end of the day saying, I will try again tomorrow.
I love that.
And so I think Morden embodies that kind of ideology, as well as the other ones that I've mentioned, like the one from A Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah.
and he has this ultimate redemption arc that no one else in the series does have.
Yeah.
And ironically so, when I was looking up some fun facts and some trivia about Morden prior to this episode, I found that a couple of the art staff on from BioWare, namely the associate art director, basically said that they had created Morden in the image of Clint Eastwood.
Interesting.
And so when you consider Morden in the framework of Clint Eastwood, especially with Clint Eastwood's later roles towards the end of his life, I'm sorry, he's still alive, I think.
I know what you mean.
But towards the end of his pinnacle of Hollywood appearances, when you consider Morden in that framework, Morden does appear as the stereotypical, the trope of Western movies left and right of the bad guy gone good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he's the bad cowboy gone good. And Morden is kind of a cowboy when you think about it. I'd love to see Morden in a cowboy hat, by the way.
How would you fit that on
I don't know, but I'm sure there's some, if there's any listeners out there who are particularly skilled at art, you ever feel the inkling of drawing Morden Solis with a cowboy hat on, I will be very pleased to make that my avatar for I don't even know how long.
I love it. All right, guys, Gauntlet has been thrown down. I know we got some really good artists listening to this, so.
So, let's yeah, see it. I think Morden as Clint Eastwood, or Clint Eastwood as Morden. Maybe Clint Eastwood should play Morden in a movie adaptation. I'm not even sure, but I think it would work. Like, I'm thinking Clint Eastwood, Gran Torino, Clint Eastwood.
Gosh.
But yeah, I think that kind of brings it, like, you know, full circle for understanding what kind of character Morden is for the people who have never played Mass Effect. And for the people who have played Mass Effect, I think there's a special place in everyone's heart for Morden, no matter if you were Paragon or Renegade. If you're Renegade, I pray for you. Because if you're totally Renegade, then what you have done to Morden should keep you up at night.
See, I'm not someone who can go through and have the evil playthrough. I can't do it. I can't do it on games. I struggle with that too much. I want to make them happy. I want all my characters to thrive. and Mass Effect like stomps on that all over the place and goes, ha ha, ha, fool. but
yeah,
I still
it
try.
Does a little bit of a Game of Thrones type of scorched earth mindset with the ultimate fate of all characters. And like we said, sometimes it just doesn't matter what you choose. Yeah. Sometimes you're not going to see the consequences of your decisions in Mass Effect for 3 games. You know, you're going to play 1, maybe Rex doesn't live. You think, okay, not a big deal. Then Mass Effect 3 rolls around, and all of a sudden, there's nothing you can do to help Morden, to help the entire situation with the Genophage.
Yeah.
And it's all because you couldn't talk Rex down.
If I'd had any idea what losing Legion would have done, I had no clue. And it was kind of funny because I think that got a little bit teased to me when I was recording the episode about Legion. I have to go back and listen again because I think there was a, oh, he didn't live. Oh, you're going to have fun in 3. It's kind of like, uh-oh.
You're like, no.
I had no idea. I had no idea, though, how consequential that would be. So,
yeah, he's also Morden is also the only Mass Effect 3 major character who was, and this is going to be kind of a breaking the fourth wall thing. So if people would like to live in blissful ignorance, definitely stop listening right now. Because in Mass Effect 2, Morden is played by Michael Beatty, I think is how you pronounce his name. And then in Mass Effect 3, he's played by an actor named William Sellers.
Oh,
so it's actually 2 different
that.
Actors. Yeah, and they do such an amazing job, I think, with post-production effects. So that you wouldn't
That's
even
fascinating.
Know.
Well done.
Yep.
Thank you so much for chatting with me about Morden, who is absolutely one of my all-time favorite characters of all games at this point. I mean, he really is. I've been really looking forward to having a conversation about him. So thank you for that. If anybody wants to reach out to you, talk more about Morden, talk more about Mass Effect.
That's right.
Where can they find you?
I am always, always, always up for talking about Morden, always talking about Mass Effect. I'm streaming Mass Effect. Like I had mentioned, I'm streaming Mass Effect 1 ahead of the Legendary Edition coming out. And cool. If people want to interact with me, they can drop a line in the Robots Radio Discord on the Mass Effect Lorecast channel. Yeah. Or they can reach out to me on Twitter. I just made this N7 Legend Twitter account, so I'm trying to build a following there. It would help a lot if you just hit follow, tweet at me. And then you can also, if anyone is a fan of Mass Effect, you can find on my profile links to the episodes and links to the official Mass Effect Lorecast Twitter. That is at Mass Effect Cast. And my own Twitter is at N7 The Legend. So I had to make it N7 The Legend because, unfortunately, N7 Legend was taken. So whoever is out there with that one... But if you've also want to follow me on Twitch, I used to have the online alias Kung Fu Kangaroo, and Twitch still has not let me update that one yet. I got 27 more days before I can. But if you want to follow me on Twitch, I'm at Kung Fu_Kangaroo. And if you want to connect with me on Xbox, I'm primarily playing games on Xbox right now. If you want to connect with me there, I am just KF space Kangaroo. So
sweet. I will get all of those into the show notes so that everybody can find you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me on. Love talking about Mass Effect. So
me too.
Very happy to be here.
Now that I'm more versed in it and I'm able to, I love discussing it. There's so much good stuff happening in there. So
and there's a whole, you know, universe of lore behind it. So
yeah,
if you're curious,
I know. When I get Legendary, I'm definitely going to be taking my time and because it was tricky because, you know, when I was playing through for 2, I had that slight bit of pressure that I really need to finish this because I want to make sure that, you know, I know what I'm talking about a little bit at least for the episode, but so I was kind of trying to rush it through, and I didn't get to delve as deeply into the lore as I really would have liked. But once Legendary comes out, I'm going to be reading through all that Codex stuff and
getting to know it really well. And if anyone perhaps has a long commute or they have time that they want to spare where they want to hear about the Mass Effect universe ahead of the Legendary Edition, please do come by. Please do check out the Mass Effect Lorecast.
It's fantastic.
We just started about a month ago.
Yeah.
A little bit more than a month ago, actually. But I just heard word 2 weeks ago that our podcast had entered Apple's top 100 video game podcasts, which was really cool.
Yeah.
I think we were occupying spot number 62. Hopefully we just keep growing from here because we love doing this. You know, we love putting together these episodes, much like we've been talking about this past hour. And so I really love it. Always love it, and the feedback and the conversations that fans engage me in is one of the most rewarding parts.
Love it. Awesome. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
We will talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to the Pixel People podcast. Check out the show notes for links to the game and characters discussed and to connect with me and my guest. Want to be a guest on the show? There's a link in the show notes for a short form you can fill out, and I'll reach out to you. A huge thank you to my patrons, especially my Tier 2 and 3 patrons, Red and Aperture Flash, and thank you to Elias Ali and Andy Brooks, who created the theme music. You can follow the show on Twitter, at PixelPeoplePod, and keep up with FireRider on Twitter, Twitch, and Discord. Enjoying the show? Be sure to subscribe, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I'd love it if you could leave a review. It helps more people find the show. See you next time.